We'd like to welcome each and every individual to Mastermind Partnerships. Hi, my name is Kevin King, and I'll be your facilitator for today's call, Over 60 and Loving Life, Special Edition, Dimensional Marriage. If you have any questions, feel free to connect with the individual who invited you to participate in today's session, or you can call toll-free 888-230-2300. That's 888-230-2300. Or if you're calling outside the U.S., you can call the U.S.-based number at 630-393-9909. That's 630-393-9909. We're jumping right into today's call. Last week, as we started our whole process of dimensional marriage, Over 60 and Loving Life Special Edition, what could it possibly mean? Well, some of the ideas that had come up were pretty intriguing. First, Mark Boersma, president of Synergy Solutions, had shared, when he first got married, he got engaged, he had a lot of energy and a lot of excitement for new marriage. But now dimensional marriage he's seeing after 30 years of marriage has the depth. It has depth. So a dimensional marriage, for a loose working definition, is having the excitement of a new marriage and the depth of a mature marriage, where your spouse completes you, where they accelerate you. You'd rather spend time with them than anyone else in the whole world. But the thing that happens in marriage, especially after 20, 25, 30, 40 years, is there's friction that naturally occurs in every relationship. Alan Stein, president of Tanglewood Conservatories, had brought that information up. And it's interesting, but as we look at dimensional marriage, friction is seen as an opportunity, not as an obstacle. Like a pearl, which is a piece of sand that irritates the clam to produce a priceless item. And that's the same thing it is in marriage. And we talked about how a man can capture the heart of a woman, challenge her, play with her, have fun, and do it openly in public. So one of the things that were brought up as kind of a social taboo is men typically don't confront women. It's just not socially acceptable. But done in a loving way can really capture her heart. And into making a dimensional shift, if you want to make a connection, most people think that you have to be super nice. And we kind of concluded, no, you have to tell the truth. And as husbands, it's important that we apologize. If we've hurt our wives, we need to apologize as many times as will win back their heart, as will heal their heart. So that's kind of a quick overview of what we did last week. This week is Over 60 and Loving Life. We're going to talk about how do we recognize those defining moments that change our life. So if you could precisely capture moments that would change your marriage forever, would you want to know how to do it? So that's what we're going to be doing this week. So as we look at it, we're going to be opening up the lines here in a moment. And I want you to be thinking of if you could recognize those defining moments. Even if you could recognize those defining moments, would you know what to do once you found it? So let's open up the lines here. We're going to start here with Mark Boersma, president of Synergy Solutions. Mark, what do you think about that question?
Well, absolutely, I'd want to know it, even if I couldn't do anything or even if I did it wrong, because if you don't see it, well, then it doesn't do any good at all.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right, it's like see, understand, and do.
Right, see, think, and do. And so it's like, okay, it's something new. I'm not sure how to respond to this. Okay, not a problem. So I'm gonna think through something, and it's not going to work. Not a problem. Much of my life is not working. So it's like, okay, I'm used to things not working. Okay, so over the wall, you know, so the walls of opportunity, over, under, to left, to the right, once I tear it down somehow, some way, the bigger the wall, the thicker the wall, the harder it is to get through, the more important it is to make the breakthrough. So that natural law, the DNA for life, is used very much in sales and in business. But the truth is that same natural law, walls of opportunities, is absolutely critical, just critical in marriage too. And there's two individuals that I talked to, one today, actually both today, two women, that would be very interesting to talk about their specific situations and, you know, what led up to it and how, you know, how they could be helped. But we may not be able to get to it today. We may need to do it, you know, we may need to do it another time.
Okay. So let's start with how do we one of the things we had mentioned, and I don't know if you're on for the first part of the call or not because I know you had to grab a quick call here, but one of the things we were talking is a defining moment is those shifts, those things that are in our lives that that make a big difference. And does it look a lot like friction? Does it look like in dimensional marriage we mentioned about seeing an opportunity, not an obstacle, like a pearl. It's a piece of sand. that friction irritates the clam and produces this gorgeous, priceless pearl. And using that as an analogy in marriage, we're not looking for friction, but when we have it, are those some of the defining moments we can identify at least?
Well, I think the thing is I think that a lot of men don't apologize when they should, and then apologize when they shouldn't.
Can you give me an example?
Well, I think I talked about my oldest daughter, Ginger Ann, last time, I think.
Yes,
right?
You did.
Okay.
Yes, you listened to the new broadcast.
Okay, so that's that's a time when I should, a very little minor thing. So I could justify, rationalize. I had somebody with a PhD that said, I'm too hard on myself, most everybody. But that's a situation where I should apologize, where I should apologize, to my daughter about something little that could have easily been just totally missed. Something big that men will apologize for when I think maybe they shouldn't. Is an example like with my wife. She was all upset a few years back. So we'd have been probably both mid-40s, teenagers, full-on teenagers, four of them, and seven kids, four teenagers, and she's all upset. She's all upset with the teenagers because they're not treating her well. And she's really ticked at them. I agree with her that they're not treating her well. When don't they treat her well? It's not when I'm around because dad pretty much invokes you respect your mother. There's just no room. But they're not treating her well because they are. They're treating her well out of fear of father. And so she won't share with the kids. She won't implement the discipline. She won't implement the discipline that's necessary to force them to comply or the heart to say, you hurt me really bad. There's no consequence to the kids. There's just consequence to me as a dad. It's like I am doing everything. The issue, sweetheart, is you. It's actually not even the kids. It's you. You're being run over. It's you. Obviously, that didn't go over very well with her. To make things worse, okay, so I double down on it. She's like, well, and she gets all mad at me. And to double down, I'm like, well, let me ask you a question, sweetheart. Why do you do everything you do for the kids? And, and she says, well, because I love them so much. I'm like, yeah, maybe not so much. You do so much of what you do to make you feel good as a mom, as a woman. Okay, now she's really mad, and she's hurt, and she's angry. Not a good time for me to apologize. The truth is starting to pierce in, and when the truth pierces, she's enslaved. She's enslaved by her own poor choices and by not doing things that are hard. It's a very sweet, amazing woman. Very hard for her to confront issues. Very hard for her to open up. At the last coffee connection, she opened up, one of the first times I've ever seen in 30 years of marriage where she was vulnerable to a group of people. That was like, whoa, wow, that is so cool. That is really, really cool. It was huge for me to see, her do that. So she gets very angry with me. And, and so if I apologize for hurting her, if the truth hurts, it was meant to hurt. That's what corrects us. So So then she gets angry with me, and she says, well, then fine. If that's the way it is, then the only reason you work is because you just want to feel good as a guy. I look at her, kind of smile and cock my head and say, yeah, there's a lot of truth to what you just said, which makes her even more mad than she was before. And, you know, and it took a couple days before she came back, and she's like, you know, thank you, that, you know, I hate that. I hate that you were right, but thank you. So if I apologize at that time, I'm apologizing, you know, because I don't want my wife mad at me, because I don't like all the tension, you know, because maybe intimacy would be impacted. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why guys apologize when they shouldn't. The wife, you know, when they apologize when they shouldn't, the wife then, you know, maybe accepts that and says thank you, but it doesn't fix the core. You know, all it does is fix the symptom. It doesn't, so it's going to happen over and over again and again and again until we get down to the core, and the core is painful and the core is messy.
Yeah, it is. It is. Thank you. Teresa, opening up the phone lines here. What are your thoughts on what you've heard so far?
I apologize. I jumped in a little late.
That's okay. We're talking about...
I don't
how
like...
Recognize... Yeah.
I think just figuring out, the whole, if you don't... the not apologizing right when you feel like things are going to explode. And letting the truth pierce, that did ring some truth in my life. A lot of the times, sometimes I think people think I'm, you know, just really nice, but sometimes if I'm to a point, I'm like, okay, I need to let you know this one piece. And then I find myself apologizing very quickly when I'm like, oh, well, now you're really upset. So I think just pondering through that, like how to be in the next dimension with other people and sitting in that messiness, even if it's going to be really bad, and trying to work with them in a better way instead of just taking it back. Is what I'm kind of thinking through as that's been shared.
So in order to sit in that situation, do you think it's important then that people are disciplined? People need to be disciplined thinkers. People need to be disciplined in taking action. People need to be disciplined in every area of their life. What kind of discipline does it take in order to sit in the middle of that pain and feel it and recognize the truth?
Depending on the dimension, I guess, you're in. But initially, I think it takes a fair amount. Because I don't think most people invite, like, the solid truth. And even if I have a hard truth coming my way, if I try to share something with somebody else, it may not. It's like I instantly feel bad, but then I'm like, no, I don't want to take that back, and trying not to apologize.
See, I think the key is we do want to take it back. Like, I want to take it back. I want to go ahead and make it feel good. I want everything. So if we want to take it back, like we're like, man, I want to take that back, we probably shouldn't. And if we don't want to take it back, like, no, I'm not going to take that back, we might go ahead and be in alignment with stubbornness. And it's like, you know, now then it gets in. So if our heart is not... You know, if my heart doesn't grieve for my wife and my kids, because this is going to manifest itself, you know, this is going to manifest itself in, for my kids the rest of their life. I mean, this
right.
And so, anyways, I don't know if that makes
sense. So, like, if you want to take it back in that moment, but since it's been repeated over and over and over and nothing's changing, you realize, well, I can't really take it back because then it's never going to go anywhere.
Right. Right. It's counterintuitive. It's like the opposite of what, like, it's the opposite of what your feelings are. Like the instrument panel say go right. My feelings. So the feelings are often in the moment. They're about the moment. They're not about the future. And maybe they're, you know, some reflection of the past. I don't know. And so to get above the feelings, over and above the feelings, out in front of the feelings, and not have the feelings govern us. I mean, we're sensitive to those feelings. They have some meaning, but they can lead us astray pretty quick, too.
Right.
Yeah, so how do we get above the feelings? Is it pretty much always counterintuitive, or is this, what kind of a discernment does it take in order to get above those feelings or around them?
That's the thing that's tricky, Kevin. It's not always counterintuitive.
Right.
Right. If it was counterintuitive always, it'd be easy. What do I think I do? Take the opposite direction. So sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. And so, you know, I think the continued focus on truth and say, what is the truth? Because anything less than the truth is enslavement. So I'm going to be enslaved. Other people are going to be enslaved. Future generations are going to be enslaved. I mean, if we got in, this is over 60 in Loving Life, if we got in to the, you know, what's going on with my mom, who's mid-70s, dad, who's mid-70s, if we went ahead and peeled back that can of worms, what's happening right now, that is going to be an exciting situation. And if I had to say what percentage of a chance does that have to be exciting, I'd say 0.0000001. I mean, that thing is just so, in my opinion, so messed up. And so it's like, okay, but it will. I mean, somehow. And there is benefit, but the depth, you know, the depth, the dimensions that, like, the dimension I'm at is not nearly where I need to be at to be able to process all of this and to understand, you know, what are the proper choices, what are the proper things to do.
Wow. So once we see an opportunity, once we think, see it, think, and then do, once we kind of table the discernment, I mean, but we have to pursue the truth, and then there's going to be a dimensional shift even in that question, not to turn this into a philosophical discussion, but it's dimensional living. It's really dimensional marriage inside of over 60 and Loving Life is, well, then how are we defining truth? Because in our culture today, truth is defined not by any core absolutes for the most part, but it's whatever your local community of people you're hanging out with believes, which is deception if it's not grounded on something more than just feelings or preferences. So now we're talking about we have to be focused on what the truth really is in reality, not our version of it, not something that makes us feel good, because the next action we take is going to define what we believe about the truth, isn't it?
One more time?
Yeah. So we have to know what the truth is in reality, not our own version of it or the one that makes us feel good, because if we see, think, and do, we see recognizing or see defining moments that change our life, we think differently, we see what that opportunity is, and then if we're pursuing the truth, then the next action, or what the do part of the see, think, and do, is going to be a defining, it's going to really change that defining moment. I mean, if we don't understand what the truth is about that situation, if we're not pursuing the truth, no matter how hard it hurts our heart, but if we are pierced with the truth and say, you know what, that's real, that's real, that's the reality of it, because then the next action we take is going to be a huge defining moment. Right? It's not as
maybe,
tight as it
maybe,
needs to be.
Maybe not.
Okay. So we can see, think maybe our idea, our version of the truth, and then whatever we do at that point, at least we're taking some kind of action.
Yeah, and the results of it, you know, may produce some type of result that we like, and we say, oh, we know the truth, but it's not. Or it may produce some type of result we don't like, and we say, oh, that's not the truth, but it is.
Mm.
So we may think it's a defining moment when it's really not, or may think it's not when it really is. We may think we're right when we're wrong, or wrong when we're right.
Well, that's exciting. What call are we on again? I think I'm the facilitator of the call, maybe. Sort of, kind of. I don't know. What was that, a dimensional change? Was that a defining moment? I don't know.
I mean, see, Alan, if he was on today, he would go, yeah. You know, I mean, it's like at the a few months back at the Mastermind seminars, he asked me, he says, Mark, describe God to me. And I looked at him and I said, Alan, it's God. I'm a human being. I can't, anything that I would try to describe would be so woefully inadequate. I don't even want to describe God. I mean, because it's beyond my comprehension. And he looked at me, he says, I just want to kiss you. And so, like, that's where Alan is at. And he would say, I totally get what Mark said. It's just, it's a weird place to be, and it's like, so let me get this straight, Mark. You're totally clueless.
Yep.
And you have, like, very little confidence that you know truth. Yep. But yet you're willing to confront your wife with stuff that you're really sure is true. Yep. And your kids too. Yep. But you're not really confident you're right. Yep. You are so confused, you have no idea what's going on. Yep. And you're okay with this? Yep. I mean, does that make sense, Kevin?
Yeah. Yep. Nope. Kind of, sort of, possibly, maybe. I mean, I think there's something, just from my background, and you and I share similar backgrounds, and so does Teresa. I mean, there's just no way that we can possibly understand the full infinite expanse of God, or even describe it in things that are going to be adequate. And I can agree with that. And yet, God has revealed himself to us in the way he's chosen to reveal himself to us. Don't you think? So he has
yep.
made certain things very clear, and a lot of things, you know, like Deuteronomy 29:29 says, the mysteries of God belong to God. That's a paraphrase. But the great mysteries, they belong to God. Things that are counterintuitive, that are still truth, it doesn't seem right. That's, you know, we don't have one thing. My grandmother, she was mentioned her before, Data Mae Woodruff. You know, she lived to be 95 and a half years old. She died in 2000 in December. And one of the questions I had for her months before she passed away, I was going through some issues and I wanted to confide in her. And I said, Grandma, why do you think this is? And she says, well, son, you don't have eternal perspective. And that made a huge impact on my life. So
yeah,
I
see that, like that right there. That right there, in my opinion, is just it's mind numbing. It takes you and brings you through like infinite number of dimensions and say, you're a human being.
Right.
You know, you're living a very short life. And so,
yeah.
So it's like when God sees this, how does he see it? And all of a sudden, it's like when you start to get a glimpse of how God's seeing it, it changes like everything. It's like everything starts to go ahead and become a very, like what you see, what you think to be true, you start to realize is not, and what you think to be false maybe is true. I mean, it's just, it's like when, you know, the Hubble space, when it goes out into the outer parts of the universe, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, that's, okay, did not expect to see that out there. And so it becomes, in the most difficult, trying, hard times, it becomes like, wow, this is a great place to be.
It's a humbling place, isn't it?
And humbling. I mean, I'm, you know, deeply analytical, very much of a statistician, and so I'm always looking at life. And so it's like 1/1,000,000,000th of a chance that this thing's going to work out with my mom and dad stuff, you know. And it's like, but it's like, I don't know, somehow I know it will, even though all the odds, like all the statistical odds are against it, but it'll be okay. It'll be fine. But, it may not be fine the way I look at it. So when I go ahead and see it, I'm like, yeah, it did not work out. But that may have been exactly how it was supposed to work out. Or it did, and there'll be tremendous benefit from that.
So when we ask what is it, go ahead.
Well, my parents had said, you know, I'd said, you know, Mom, Dad, there's been some deep hurt with my kids, you know, situations that have happened with my kids and you. But I'm okay with that. I mean, in that hurt, there's tremendous benefit that my kids have gained in that hurt. And I see that. Which is, you know, the tendency, I think, of a parent is to not want your kids to go through the hurt. But when they go through the hurt, and I've, you know, talked to a number of them about it, and I said, well, you know, you may talk to grandpa and grandma, you may not get what you're looking for, but that's okay. What's happened has happened. You get to make a decision in going forward. And so that hurt can be tremendous. It can be one of the most defining moments in their life. Which is intriguing.
So it is intriguing, and I think, and I want to get Teresa's perspective on this. The thing that has come to thinking in my mind, it's the humility portion. It's saying, well, asking what is the truth of this situation and humbling ourselves to the revealed truth that God has given us in what he has given us. But then it's also our discernment of how to apply that, right? And it's like,
it's not only how to apply it, but what is that truth? Because,
right.
You know, I was brought up very strong on the Bible, but then when I hit my, you know, late 30s, early 40s, all of a sudden everything just blew up on that. I mean, everything. It's like, oh, no. And so when that happens, you know, when that happens, it's like, oh, my gracious, everything I thought maybe isn't. I mean, it like takes your whole foundation and kind of moves it around. And so it's most intriguing. You know, it's most intriguing. So even looking at the Bible, it's like, okay. Even if you say, okay, the Bible is the Bible, it is God's word, it is from the creator of the universe, you know, even if you say all of that, you know, not even what to do with it, but what does it mean, is like, to me, almost infinite. So how are you supposed to figure that out?
Right. Teresa, your thoughts.
I think there's a certain beauty in the mystery of God, because it's there and we're not going to be able to answer everything. And as humans, we try to figure it out. But learning to kind of work with that, even like I heard, you know, preaching the gospel in truth and love. So, yes, you want to deliver truth and bring it to people, but you also need to incorporate love in that. And what does that really mean, and how can you do that well?
That blows my mind, Teresa. Because that's, see, to me, that is a dimensional shift when somebody says truth and love, like you did, and then you say, what is love? So, like,
right.
That's a dimensional shift to where, like, people will, I know what love is. No, you know what you think love is to you, but that may not truly be love. Like, that to me is just really cool, Teresa, that you put that in there and say, but what is love?
Right. Man, we've run out of time today, but I want to pick it up where we left off today next week. Wow, if you're listening to the rebroadcast of this and say, wow, that was intriguing, or what just happened, if you've received benefit from this, go to thevisionproject.net. That's thevisionproject.net. Go to what's your biggest challenge. Go to your help is needed. There's an opportunity to pay it forward there. There's a lot of white papers. If you haven't received the white paper on Over 60 and Loving Life, then please request that. You can, if you have any questions about the material in today's session, you can contact the individual that invited you to participate, or you can call toll-free 888-230-2300. Again, 888-230-2300, or if you're calling outside the U.S., you can call the U.S.-based number at 630-393-9909. That's 630-393-9909. God bless, and have an amazing day. Bye-bye.